This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The nation's top attorney won't make a legal call on waterboarding, at least not yet. But Attorney General Michael Mukasey did say if the CIA was to make the move to use the interrogation tactic again, the president would have to be notified and he would make sure that Congress knew what was going on. That's left Congress fuming, but what's the next move? To talk about this week's top news stories, we've got Michael Fletcher. He is a national economics reporter and former White House correspondent for The Washington Post. Marcus Mabry, the international business editor for The New York Times, and Adora Udoji, the co-host of The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji, a new public radio program launching this spring. Hi, folks.
Hey, how you doing?
Hi there.
So let's go to waterboarding. Last October, then Attorney General nominee Michael Mukasey said he would offer his opinion on waterboarding once he'd been properly briefed. It's an interrogation tactic used by the U.S. government on suspected terrorists, and some people, including Senator Ted Kennedy, consider it torture. Well, Mukasey's confirmation has come and gone, and his answer is, it depends. So what does this mean, Adora? Was this just a big punt on his part?
I think it's been fascinating to watch this unravel, and it's my bet that the history books are not going to be terribly kind to this whole notion of legal relativism, if I could just get that out. I mean, this notion that somehow torture, the definition of what it is, depends on who it may benefit at any given time, it is really something unusual, and they certainly didn't teach that in law school when I was there.
Marcus, when you look at this ongoing debate, is this something that's going to help set future U.S. policy? I mean, there's been a whole slew of discussions over things like preemptive war and all these concepts of how the U.S. Constitution and U.S. government fits into the context of an age of terrorism and response to that. Is this debate going to set U.S. policy?
Well, you know, Farai, this is one of the legacies, one of the many negative legacies of the George W. Bush presidency. And I think whoever the next president of the United States is, we're going to see a reversal of many Bush policies, and this will be one of them. There will be an unequivocal, shortly after the next president is sworn in, an unequivocal statement that U.S. policy is that we do not engage in torture, we do not engage in illegal activities, and waterboarding is definitely one of those. We'll see a bunch of reversals, I think, too, of lots of executive privileges that the Bush administration has taken on, has decided that the president has the power to go around the courts, to ignore the Congress, and to decide issues unilaterally. I think all that kind of policy nonsense will evaporate with this president. And it's a negative legacy. And I think the next president, whether Republican or Democrat, will spend a lot of time reversing that Bush legacy.
Michael, the Wall Street Journal recently reported on a group of three young men who videotaped one of them being waterboarded. The mock detainee was 26-year-old Jean-Pierre Larocque, who later blogged about the experience, and his blog is called Media for Social Change. He explained that he and his friends wanted to witness firsthand the effects of the tactic. He's a swimmer, and he said that he had trouble lasting even a few minutes while being waterboarded. Now, here's a couple of questions. One, are Larocque and his pals activists or citizen journalists or both? And are they kind of calling out bigger media companies for not exploring this issue deeply enough from the side of what human beings endure?
Well, I think they have to be called activists in this case. And I think they're also right, because I think they're trying to bring some kind of sort of clearer image to waterboarding. I think most of us just have no idea what's involved here. And that whole area of kind of harsh interrogation, as the Bush administration might put it, is something that's a very, very obscure to most Americans. And I think their work is trying to bring some form to this.
Now, Michael, I'm going to stick with you for a second. This is something that is affecting people across the country. We're talking about mortgages. And the FBI recently announced an investigation into 14 companies involved in the subprime loan business. And insider trading and accounting fraud are two of the big issues they're looking for. So these mortgages are bought and sold between companies. How hard is it going to be to pin culpability on any one organization?
Well, I'll be interested to see how this investigation kind of progresses, because not only are mortgages bought and sold now, then now they're repackaged into securities that are sold across the globe. So the trail of money, you know, literally circles the earth. So, and a lot of this business is unregulated, and that's been part of the big problem with what we've seen with the credit crunch and mortgage crisis that the country is facing now. Essentially, people don't know who's holding the bag, who's going to end up losing money, and the result has been that many lenders have pulled back. So, you know, it's not sort of fraud probably in the sense that you think of people lying on a mortgage application, even though there seems to be plenty of that to go around as well. But it'll be interesting to see. My guess is that you won't see a lot of indictments in the end, at least on the secondary part of this. You might see the front end where you have a lot of instances where you have homeowners who are now kind of underwater of their homes saying that mortgage brokers encouraged them to lie about their income, overstate their income, they didn't seek to document their income, that sort of thing. I think those cases will be easier to prove, but I'll be interested to see what happens with sort of the broader kind of securities piece of this.
Adora, you are in this position of getting ready to start something, start your show, and you're going to be based in New York City. New York City in some ways has been insulated because there's so many people who want to buy there. There hasn't been as much fallout. But how do you want to approach this? Once your show gets launched on WNYC, how do you want to dig into this issue?
Oh, I think there are so many different levels to it. I guess I'm very much with Michael in that it'll be interesting to see what becomes of the FBI investigation as well as the SEC. So that's one element, of course, that we'd be following. But more importantly, I think we'd like to really take a look at how this is affecting people. We all see the charts, we see the numbers, but what does this really mean? We've even seen some pictures of neighborhoods where every other house is for sale. But in terms of everyday life, we know when we take a look at some of the latest projections that there are going to be plenty more people finding themselves in tough positions in the next 6-12 months. And so how does that change their life? How does it change the decisions that they're making about their lives for their families? So I think that we're going to take a look at this from just about every single angle.
Marcus, when it comes down to investigating things like this, a lot of times you have people coming from different agencies. So we're talking about the FBI, but also Securities and Exchange, and then individual state attorney generals are going to get in on the action. Is that going to help or is that going to muddy the issue?
Well, that's a great question, Farai. I mean, you know, it's one of these things. You know, I was based in South Africa when they were dealing with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, dealing with the crimes of apartheid. And one of the underpinnings of that was that you would not get justice if you were a victim of apartheid, but you would get truth. The truth would be brought out. No one would necessarily go to jail. And if you admitted to your crimes, that was the whole point. You would not go to jail. So that one has, I think, to choose here in this grave crisis in this country, as one had to choose in South Africa at that point, between exposing what happened and actually bringing people to justice. I don't think we're going to bring anyone to justice. I think the horse has already left the barn. I think those who are suffering, who are underwater now, who were the victims of fraudulent mortgage lenders in particular, obviously investors who were then sold these bad mortgages that were securitized into debt that could be traded and was sold. Literally, that debt was sold all across the world. We did a story not long ago in the paper about a little village in Norway that finds itself broke because they invested in subprime when they thought it was actually grade A, triple A quality debt, and it wasn't. So I think the damage is done. I think the most we can do now is hope that these investigations will bring to light what happened, where we went wrong. Because the next time we have, once again, you know, the Fed right now is trying to loosen credit so that people will keep extending credit and taking out credit. The next time we have too much credit, right now we have too little, and the pendulum always swings back and forth. We're going to need to know what do we need to look out for to make sure people don't abuse the loose credit that's going to come again one day. That's a long way from now, but we need to find out how these things happen.
Marcus, you used the term underwater, and so did Michael. Just real quick, there is this lawsuit, federal judge threw out, involving the Army Corps of Engineers in the levee break during Hurricane Katrina. There were 500,000 claims by businesses, government entities, and residents, and the judge said that although the Corps failed to protect the city, the law does not hold them accountable. Is this a blow, yet another blow, to the people who've been battered by Katrina, and do you think this will affect the future of the city?
I think it is a blow. I think if you talk about, again, you know, justice, which is never repaid, I think the tragedy of New Orleans and of Katrina is exactly that. It's justice that will never be. There will never be justice for the crimes that were committed there, largely, as this case alleged, by our own government and its own incompetence. Unfortunately, there will not be retribution. And unfortunately, once again, those folks are abandoned. I think as a matter of law, and I didn't go to law school like you, Dora, but as a matter of law, I think, you know, this relies on the Flood Control Act of 1928, which actually indemnified the government, said the government would not be liable for any failures in levees and systems that it set up. So I think as a matter of law, it seems pretty clear-cut. But again, as a matter of justice, that's another issue.
Adora, since you do have a law background, is this something, what's the plan B? Is anyone going to be able to sue someone else, some other government entity on some other grounds?
Well, I think Marcus said it exactly right. There's really two tracks here. The law, it does appear to be very clear, and it's not unusual that government entities and agencies are immune from legal action of this kind. I guess I was actually there in New Orleans during Katrina and sort of saw very firsthand the absolute incompetence that built those levees and the Army Corps of Engineers. And there's no question, and the judge noted that in his decision. But the question is, what comes next now? In terms of suing other people, as we all know, there's lots of litigation going on with insurance companies. And that will continue for some time. There's other litigation involving some of the federal insurance programs as well. So that's one tract towards justice. But I think that what's most important, or what is very important up there in that priority list, is that what is the Army Corps of Engineers going to do now in the work that they are doing on those levees? Are they going to be held to a higher level of accountability than they have been in the past?
Michael, very quickly, what's the next step for reporters? What should reporters be reporting on regarding New Orleans and the Gulf?
You know, I've been in New Orleans probably 7 or 8 times in the wake of Katrina, and it's always shocking to go down there and see the state of the rebuilding and how slowly things mm-hmm. are moving. And I think it's kind of our charge to kind of keep that in the spotlight, you know, keep the sort of pressure on the people responsible for the rebuilding programs and make sure that federal money, more than $100 billion, flows into the hands of New Orleans citizens.
All right. Well, gentlemen, lady, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Michael Fletcher is national economics reporter and former White House correspondent for The Washington Post. He joined us via phone on assignment in Arizona. Marcus Mabry is the international business editor for The New York Times and joined us from NPR's New York Bureau. And Adora Udoji is co-host of The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji, a new public radio program launching this spring. And she joined us from WNYC in New York.